Hi, I'm Barry Orr, standing in for Gary O'Brien on a fantastic weekend of racing on both sides of the English Channel. Welcome to Racing, Only Better.
Tiger Roll joins the greats. God O'Star has done it, he's won five King George's.
Welcome back. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by two luminaries of ITV racing. That's our weekly contributor, Kevin Blake, and his co-star, Sally Ann Grassick. Guys, welcome to Racing Only Better.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, great to be back on, Bear. I'm here in Tipperary riding out Hurricane Lorenzo. Things haven't got spicy yet, but I'm looking forward to nature putting on a bit of a show later on.
And Sally Ann, you're in Goff selling horses today.
I'm in Goff, yeah, three yearlings to sell today. It's been a long week, so apologies for any noise in the background. I found the quietest place I can during a horse sale with rugby going on at the same time.
Well, you'll be glad to know Gary O'Brien's on holidays, but he will be back next week in the hot seat. But for now, we've got an action-packed show, as you know. There's some fantastic weekends racing on both sides of the English Channel. We've got the Sun Chariot in Newmarket, some fantastic racing in Ascot, and we've also got the Ark, as I mentioned, on Sunday. We'll also be listening to David Johnson going under the radar when he highlights three horses that have caught the eye in time form this week. But before that, let's just reflect on last week, guys. Towcester closing, never good to see racecourses closing, and particularly a track steeped in the history that Towcester is.
It's a real pity, Barry. Look, it's never nice to see any track close, but Towcester had an awful lot to offer, I think it's fair to say. And look, it's a pity they couldn't get it sorted out. There seems to have been a fair bit of pulling and dragging there behind the scenes, and it seems like it's come to the end of the road, and it's a pity. We've seen a few race courses close in relatively recent years. You know, Folkestone, a little bit closer to home for us, Tralee. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, as time goes on, I suspect in my own mind, looking at the way the game is moving, I suspect this won't be the last race course closure we see. And it's a great pity if that proves to be the case, because one of the great assets of British and Irish racing is how much variety we have. And in Towcester, we had a pretty unique track, and now we have it no more. So while it might seem like a small thing in the greater scheme of British racing, a small little bit of character has been removed from the fold now that Towcester is closed.
Yeah, for sure. And Sally Ann, obviously great racing last weekend in Newmarket with the Cheveley Park and Mill Isle for Jessica Harrington. She really seems to have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to two-year-old fillies.
Yeah, she's flying at the moment, Jessica Harrington. I've seen her this week. She's been buying yearlings here in Goff for next year already. She bought one that I know for the It's All About the Girls Syndicate, and already looking forward to next year's two-year-old. But she's in great form, and she's been really positive about the horses that she has and the future for them. And it's great to see an Irish trainer, other than the O'Briens, performing on the top stage across the Irish Sea.
Yeah, here. Well, obviously, there's some fantastic racing again this weekend, and the Sun Chariot, the fillies take centre stage, Grade 1 action in Newmarket on Saturday, and it's we've got the last nine in now, and it's a really competitive field, it has to be said. When you look at it, there's only a point and a half separate the first five in the betting. It's 7-2 the field at the moment. We've got 7-2 Lawrence, 7-2 Hermosa, and Vervacious Iridessa, who's a course and distance winner as a two-year-old, is a 4-1 chance, and it's 11-2 Lavender Boot, 12-1 Bardem. Kevin, have you any strong opinions on the?
Yeah, just in terms of the market, Barry, I was a little bit surprised that once the declarations came through that Iridessa isn't a fav. You know, I know she doesn't necessarily have the most consistent of profiles, but when she's good, she's very good, and she beat a fair few of these in what I thought was quite good style last time in the Matron Stakes. Beat Hermosa, obviously Lawrence back and forth, and I Can Fly back in fifth. Has Voracious to beat of those she hasn't met before, it's fair to say. But you look at the final field here, and Voracious made the running to put up what seems an improved effort to win the Falmouth last time. But you also have other front runners in the mix there in Lawrence and Hermosa. So you can't imagine there'll be a soft lead there for any of those three. And whereas Iridessa will, you know, I think she's best. We didn't necessarily, she didn't necessarily get the race run to suit her ideally last time. She's a filly that I think likes to be covered up, likes to come in between horses, if at all possible, and where she's drawn and where those three likely pace setters are drawn. It looks to me like the race will pan out quite nicely for her. There's likely to be an ease in the ground. There should be a bit of drying in it between now and then. I wouldn't be surprised if we ended up on good to soft ground, which I think would be fine for Iridesa. And yeah, look, I think she had this option, and she had the Prix de l'Opera at Longchamp on Sunday. And, you know, for me, I think a mile, while she clearly saved 10, and, you know, she wouldn't be a million to one to stay a mile and a half if she was given another chance. I think she's very effective at a mile. And this course distance, as you say, she's operated very well over it before. And just in terms of how the race is likely to pan out, I think she has an awful lot in her favour, and she'd be my choice.
Yeah, like you say, she did win the Filly's Mile there as a two-year-old, but after she ran into Guineas this year, there was just a little murmuring, I remember, that Dunica felt she mightn't have acted on the track. I know that may sound ridiculous, considering she did win the Filly's Mile as a two-year-old, but you don't hold any sway with that theory. Her run into Guineas, you're willing to forgive her that?
Yeah, I think that there was a key difference between the Filly's Mile and the 1,000 Guineas for her in just in how the race went. In the Filly's Mile, she was bottled up. And she, like I say, she had to come through a tight gap, which she seems to really, really enjoy. Whereas at Newmarket, in the Guineas, she was out in the middle of the track. She had a lot more space, and she just wandered a little bit when she came into the dip. And you could even see that at Leopardstown last time when she hit the front. Just for a moment, she seemed to almost falter and come off a true line. And that's just her. She's just a small bit odd in open spaces. So, look, hopefully here she'll be well bottled up behind the front runners, and we'll be able to come through horses, and there'll hopefully be no sign of anything like that this time around.
Sally Ann, they're all nine particularly smart fillies, and you can make a case strongly for at least four or five of them. Vervacious for Sir Michael Stout, Oisin Murphy in the plate there now. She's one that would have a real chance as well, along with Lauren Shirley.
We always talk about Sir Michael Stout and how he improves his horses, particularly his fillies, with age, and Vervacious is one of those for Chivi, the daughter of Franco. She seems to have just really come into her own at Newmarket. We haven't seen her since the July when she won the Falmouth, but when she beat One Master, and One Master goes for France and doesn't come to here, and they miss each other this time. But she seemed to really come into her own that day. It surprised a few people, but I know Sir Michael afterwards said to me that he'd always thought a lot of her, and he was kind of expecting it from her. Lauren's, I would be worried that PJ McDonald told me after the matron that he thought that she was a bit flat. He said everything went well for her, even though, you know, the O'Brien horses lit her up a little bit early on. He said that didn't seem a problem for him, but what he was worried about is when he asked her for an effort, she didn't respond within the few strides like she normally does, and he was worried that maybe, you know, she had too many races this year, and we know how good she is, 6 Group 1s to her name, she's unbelievable. But when I spoke to Carl Burke afterwards, and I talked to him about whether she would come to France or what the plan was, he hinted that we mightn't see her for too many more races before she could be retired. So this could be potentially a last run for her before she'd be retired. She is 4 now, and with 6 Group 1s her name, she owes them the nothing. She's been unbelievable. But Voracious is an interesting one, underexposed. And another one that I like is Lavender's Blue. Amanda Parrott was at Sandown when this daughter of See the Stars won. And she's been, we know she didn't act on the track at Epsom, but she came back with a Group 3 win that day. And I think she's one flying under the radar.
Yeah, Lavender Blue, famously owned by ABBA's Benny Anderson. There'll be some singing if she manages to land the prize. My own fancy is Hermosa. I thought that in the Guineas, she obviously acted on the track, and she looked a very smart prospect that day when she landed the Guineas in Newmarket. She just went off the boil a little bit towards after Ascot. Obviously, her run in Goodwood was too bad to be true, and she looked more like herself when finishing three parts of a length second to Iridesa in the Matron Stakes at Leopardstown. I think she'll come on for that again, and I think at around a 7-2 mark, she has a big chance. But I suppose it's another filly taking centre stage this weekend, and she's in Paris in Longchamp on Sunday in Abel. Can anything beat the mighty in Abel, who's currently 8-11? Kevin, we'll start with you.
Probably not. I hope not. you know, it's fun. I know, look, this is a betting podcast and it's very betting focused, but if you need to have a bet to get a kick out of this race, you're probably in the wrong game, because it's absolutely fabulous. It's potentially history in the making. You know, one of the best race mares we've seen for quite a long time, and the CV she's put together has been quite remarkable. And look, the draw was made this morning. The final declarations came through. I imagine Frankie Dettori and John Gosden will be more than happy with stall 9. I know that, gut feeling might say, oh, it's a little bit wider than ideal, but I think Frankie, with an Abel, he has so much confidence in her. She's so tactically versatile that he will probably rather be a little bit wider, and Frankie will do what has become a bit of a trademark for him. She's sharp away from the gates, and he'll just stay out there for a furlong or so, wait to see what everyone else is doing, then commit to his position, because he knows he's riding a mare that doesn't need cover. She can make the running in the unlikely scenario that nothing else wanted to go on. She could go a little bit further back in mid-div if she needed to, if they're going mad. He has all the options in the world, and he'd be in no rush to commit. He knows he's on the best horse in the race. And look, I hope she does it. I wouldn't be too worried about the ease in the ground for her. It looks like it's going to be somewhere between good and soft by the looks of it. And she seems fine on that type of surface. She's arguably had her best preparation for an arc thus far. She hasn't been overrated. She seems to have, in my mind, taken a little step forward with each of her three starts this season. And I just really hope it happens. I hope she goes and wins. In terms of betting options, best alternatives to her, I think her old rival, Magical, she's tightened up a little bit since she was confirmed as a runner, but I see her as a very fair each-way option against her. I'd be a little bit worried about Sutsas. For Jean-Claude Rouget, I know he won over a mile and a half last time, but a stronger examination of stamina here, I'd just be a slight bit worried about him being, he's a son of Sayuni, who would get very, very few horses that are at their best over a mile and a half. They tend to be best over quite a bit shorter. Japan is rock solid. He's better, but he'll be better back up for this longer trip, I feel. But a couple I give a mention to Barry, there'll be a million to one. Especially Kiseki. I wouldn't underestimate the two Japanese horses. They've been operating at a very high level in Japan. With Kiseki, I wouldn't worry about his run behind the Voltgeist. He wasn't sent over from Japan to run well in the Prix. It's been all about the arc for him. And, you know, he ran Almandai quite close last season. And his level of form is high. He'll be bang up there. Potentially could make the running if Gea isn't anxious to blast out from stall 12. He'll be sitting second otherwise. And Blast One Piece as well, who has form mixing in with Kiseki. I feel the market's been very dismissive of them, Barry, which is surprising, given the Japanese have not quite won this race, but have gone close a few times. And with Deirdre winning at the Nassau, you know, Japanese racing is no joke. And these two have been operating at a very high level in that jurisdiction.
Yeah, Kiseki currently a 66-1 chance. You seem to make a strong case for a couple of horses to run well in it and potentially to beat the favourite even at 8-11. Personally, I think she's opposable at that price. I know that's sacrilegious at this age to say, and everyone wants her to win, but from a betting point of view and a bookmaking point of view, I think at 8-11, she doesn't represent any great value there. I think there's a couple of three-year-olds in there that will definitely serve it up to her in Japan, and Sotsas, Gayat.
Barry, I think it's definitely worth highlighting the betting without market as well. I think that's a very interesting market for this race.
Yeah, it is for sure. But just on the draw, Kevin, obviously Enable is wedged between two Ballydoyle runners in Japan and Magical now. Japan drawn 10, Magical drawn 8, Gayat drawn 12. It looks like he's surely to go off and try to make the running in drawn 12. Is his hand not kind of forced now, no?
It would have been, it's a nightmare draw for him, really, Barry. They would have much preferred to be far, far lower with him. He's widest of all, you know, statistically, horses that are drawn in the widest stall tend to miss the kick it just a little bit. So it's just not ideal. But if you watch back his win in Germany last time, he didn't make all the running. He actually sat just in behind the leaders until gradually making his way to the front after a few furlongs. So I think William Buick, while there's no obvious pacemaker in the race as such, I think Kiseki is likely to go forward and will be happy to make the running. And William Buick, you know, he'll have a conundrum because he won't want the first Gaia to get a clear lead, but I think he would much prefer to be in front if he can get there without having to really gun him to do so. And stall 12 will just make that a little bit tricky, and that's what will ultimately make the first couple of furlongs so interesting here, because I'd imagine Frankie will be watching Gaia very closely to see what he's doing, and meanwhile Kazeki, who's drawn underneath him, is likely to push forward himself. So the first couple of furlongs will be fascinating, and Frankie, I think, will be quite cool about the whole thing and will just adjust to whatever happens, whereas William Buick, I'd imagine, will be the anxious one in the first couple of furlongs, that he gets his initial move right, because that will ultimately shape his race. He's a horse that's seen his best when dominating, so it'll be fascinating to see how Buick plays it.
Yeah, Sally Ann, it'll be fascinating also. How is Enabel held? What sort of regard is she held in by the French public? And the likes of Sawflight, who's just been added to the field at a price of €120,000. You have Val Geisen there, who's ran well in the Arc previously and hasn't really got that much to make up when enabled. And, you know, what's the French challenge to her? Is it a real threat?
Well, I agree with what Kevin said earlier, is that for me as a presenter working on Sunday, the worst thing that could possibly happen is that Enabel gets beaten, because the atmosphere in Longchamp will just plummet. I know so many people who told me that they're going purely because they're planning on Enabel winning her third arc and they want to be there to witness it. I've been lucky to be there and interview Frankie on board Enabel after wins in Ireland, England and France, and both of her arcs so far. And it's been amazing moments each time, and her King George was the moment for me, I think my entire television career was interviewing Frankie after the King George being down at the winning post, seeing that finish. It will be a big bombshell now if she doesn't win, but I don't think she's unbeatable either in this. As Kevin was saying, I actually quite like Magical at the price that she's at. I think, you know, she's a bit underrated at the price she's at. But you're talking about the French challenge, that you can't underrate him. He's coming here off 3 wins in a row. You know, he won the French Derby. I know Rouget holds him in very high estimation, and he would be giving Rouget his first ever arc win, which would be amazing for him as well. He's been looking for it for a long time, but you also have to consider Val Geisen. You mentioned he's a big price, son of Galileo, now 5-year-old, and he finished third, beaten 2 lengths by Enabel in the George. He'll like it if the ground comes up with a little bit of giving it, but not too much, which is looking like what we're going to get this weekend. The forecast is good for France after a bit of rain. And he's a really strong challenge. You can never underestimate André Fabre, the master trainer in France. So the French challenge is there, although, as Kevin said, there's some interesting Japanese ones. One, of course, being ridden by Christophe Lemaire, which the French would love. It would be the ultimate combination if you could have a French jockey riding a Japanese, the first ever Japanese winner. But I think for the publicity, for the race, for the drama and everything, it's all about Enabel this weekend.
Yeah, true. For what it's worth, my Tuppen's worth is, I think Japan's a knockout each way bet in the race. He lured, obviously, Crystal Ocean's colours in York, and I think he's put his hand up as the best 3-year-old from what many think is a pretty ordinary crop, but I think he's a cut above them, and I think he'll show that on Sunday. He'll definitely ruffle her up, and I think she's opposable at the price. I know, like I said, that's not a very popular thing to say, but she's been a fantastic servant. She's a marvellous filly for sure, and the guys on TV want her to win and celebrate her, and that's what will be done for sure if she does manage to land a third arc and make history.
And if Japan wins, I'm sure you'll wipe away your tears for Enabel with a few crispy 50 euro notes.
Oh, we'll see. So when we come back, we're going to go under the radar with David Johnson of Timeform. Delighted to say we're joined now by David Johnson of Timeform. For his Under the Radar section, it's proved a very popular piece, this, David, and you've highlighted 3 horses this week. Let's start with the horse that was probably the standout performance of the weekend in Aidan O'Brien's Wichita. Took it up at the Bushes, an impressive son of No Nay Never in Newmarket on Thursday.
Yeah, exactly. It's not often we get the chance to talk about a 7-length Group 3 winner and still think of him as being under the radar. But I think in a lot of ways, it's gone a little bit and not had the full treatment that it deserves. On time form ratings, we gave him 119p, and that is second only to Pinatubo now in terms of the two-year-old performances. I thought he was really impressive. He's not in the Dewhurst, but he is in the Futurity Stakes, and to me, he looks a much more likely type for that than the recent Beresford winner in his three. And, you know, you go back through Aidan O'Brien's recent winners of that race, the likes of Magna Grecia, Jackson Warrior, even Camelot. You know, they were all Guineas winners that came out of that race. And he looks a lively one. For me, I think he's Aidan O'Brien's most likely Guineas winner at the time being.
And just tell me, as a son of No Nay Never, last year we were probably saying the same about 10 Sovereigns, who obviously turns into a sprinter, but do you think No Nay Never gets that bit of stamina that you need to win Guineas?
I certainly think when you look at this horse, Wichita, when he ran over 7 furlongs at Doncaster, he just got slightly outpaced and was coming back at the finish. And certainly, you know, when you look at his most recent run in that Somerville Capital Stakes, he's really hitting the line strong, and I think he'll be absolutely fine at the mile. Like I say, I think if he goes for the Futurity over a mile at Doncaster this year, he'll be fine. So I wouldn't be at all worried about the Guineas trip. In fact, I think he'll improve for a mile.
And from a 7-length winner to a horse at the same meeting who looked somewhat unlucky in the Fillies maiden over 7 furlongs back, he was second to Lady Lynetta.
She was, yeah. It was a real messy race, unsatisfactory in the way that it panned out. Lady Lynetta, she made all on the rail and had everything go away. Barkey, the John Gosden trained filly, she travelled really well in midfield. She was stuck behind horses 2 furlongs out. She had to switch into the middle of the track. She finished really well. I think she's beaten half a length, just finds the line coming too soon. Now, I'm not sitting here and suggesting that she's going to be a Guineas winner or a pattern winner, but in terms of a filly that's definitely ready to win a maiden near to hand, she looks a banker for something like that.
Yeah, definitely looks like a filly to keep on the right side of. And your third and final one, David, Overwright, who ran in Chester for Mark Johnson, tried to make all. He's got some immediate entries as well. I see he's entered up in Wolverhampton on Saturday.
Yeah, that's right. I think he's been taken out at Wolverhampton because they've got the deck now, but he's got a couple of entries next week. One of those is at Brighton. I think the other one's at Newcastle. And if he turns up in either of those, I certainly think he's going to take a lot of beating. He was beaten a long way at Southall on his debut. Obviously, we'll put a line through that, blame the surface. But his run at Chester was a lot more encouraging. He set a strong pace that day. And in truth, it was too strong in the conditions. I think it was the first race on the card, and it perhaps caught the jockeys out. They went a little bit too hard up front that day in this race. He was still clear entering the final furlong, and just ended up setting the race up for the favourite, Strait of Hormuz. I think, all things being equal, if his jockey had just reined him in a little bit, he'd have probably won that day. And I think we've got him rated 85p, which is more than enough to win a maiden at Newcastle or Brighton. And again, I'm not saying he's a superstar, but he's a winner waiting to happen in the short term.
Yeah, that'd be great to see if he can manage to do that in Newcastle on Monday. David, it'd be remiss of us not to get your thoughts on the Ark when we have you on the line. An Able, 11-8 on. There's a couple of decent three-year-olds in there this time round. It's a race chock-a-block with quality. What's your thoughts on it?
Obviously, An Able's the one to beat. She's top the time form racing. But when you talk about somebody that's 11-8 on, you'd probably expect them to have a little bit more in hand on form than just the £2. So she's only got £2 in hand of Gayath, and he's the one that looks really interesting to me. He gave our foreign handicapper a bit of a nightmare when he won by 14 lengths in that German Group 1 last time. It's not an easy race to assess, but it could just be that he is a superstar himself. I think you look at his price, he's about 12-1 in place. He's certainly double figures. I'd be interested in just seeing how he goes. The draw might not be ideal for him in 12, but I don't think he necessarily has to lead. And there's a Japanese horse in there, Kasiki, that's probably going to go on from a lower draw. But if William Buick can get Gaia across from his high draw, I think he's going to give Enable a real race of it.
Yeah, currently trading around the 12-1 mark is correct. And finally, David, you're part of the betting battle this weekend. Everyone's dying to hear what your nap is.
Well, I've been trolling through all the cards. I've come up with one in the 140 at Newmarket, and it's the Eva Maria of Richard Fahey's. She's only had the four runs, but she was really impressive for making a winning handicap debut at Ayr last time. She came from a long way back in a race that was steadily run. So I think you can upgrade that as it stands. But the form also looks really good. The third and fourth have won since. So, you know, she's very much going the right way. She's well-bred. She's a half-sister to James Garfield. She's a winner on soft ground as well. So she ticks plenty of the boxes that are required. And I think a filly in form at this time of year that's improving counts for a hell of a lot. And Eva Maria, she's my bet of the weekend.
Yeah, that's the filly's handicap over a mile two, and she's currently trading around a 5-1 mark. David, thank you so much for your time. That was David Johnson of Time Form with Under the Radar. Welcome back to Racing Only Better. And don't forget, you can subscribe to us through your preferred podcasters and leave a comment anytime, good or bad. There's no point in talking about Gary O'Brien on Twitter now, because when he's not here to defend himself and blankly tell us no, we won't go down that rabbit hole. on to Ascot on Saturday, some cracking racing there. The first three races on ITV. The first race off at 2 o'clock, the Roos Stakes over 5 furlongs sees Dakota Gold. Looks like he's sure to go off favourite around 9-4. Tanzeo is a 4-1 chance. Maygold, a horse I think will run really well in the race, 13-2, along with Stake Acclaim and Tis Marvellous, all 13-2, 10-1 bar them. Kevin, I'll start with you. Any strong opinions?
Never mind my opinion now, Barry. What the listeners want to hear about is if you're going to go and get Dakota Gold beat again after doing so in our first episode.
Yeah, I know. I bet against him in the first episode, that's for sure. Yeah, and I the money wasn't that easily won, to be fair. He ran a lot better than I thought he would. It was good to firm that day. It looks like it's going to be soft in Ascot. It's virtually sure to be soft in Ascot, and I'm not sure that will really suit him. Although over 5 furlongs, he has got form on soft ground, and over 5 furlongs, it could help him. He was staying on well again last day at the finish when he looked like they were all going to go away from him, and he's really such an improved horse. He must be a joy to own. But no, I think I'm going to go with May Gold this time around. Ed Walker's horse started the season off 75, had two decent runs before his Salisbury handicap, which won off 77 on soft ground. Again, two decent runs after that on good ground before landing a Haydock handicap off 90 by 2¾ lengths. She's obviously an improving filly and loves soft ground. I thought she's currently 13-2. She was 8-1 before the final decks come in, but now a 13-2 chance. And I thought she was a standout each way bet in the race. So yeah, that's a long-winded way of saying I'm taking on Dakota Gold as well.
Excellent. I don't want to have a big opinion on this one, Barry, but I would give a shout for Dan Dino. He's an interesting horse. He was quite high level earlier in his career, went off the boil a bit last season, and it transpired that he had quite bad feet problems, and they just gave him a long, long break to let his feet grow out and start from scratch with him again. And he's put together a very solid campaign this season. He's just won the twice, but he's gone very close in a couple of big, big handicaps, most notably when he was third in the Wokingham. And he seems to enjoy Ascot. The ground will be a slight question mark. I'm hoping it won't be any worse than soft, and hopefully a little bit better. But 5 at Ascot, strong test of stamina at the trip, will suit him well, I think. And, you know, his form at his very best this season is comparable to Dakota Gold's, I think. And receiving £3 from him in particular, I think he'll hopefully be able to shake up the fast.
Sally Ann, Danzeo, an 8-year-old, Michael Appleby trains it. Obviously, he's well exposed at this stage. Is there anything in there of a less exposed nature that interests you?
I actually agree with you, Barry, on May Gold. I saw Ed Walker this week here at Goff. He was over with Frank Meerling. He said to me that although he'd pulled out a few of the other horses like Caradoc because of the forecast rain and the ground soaking up before the weekend, he thought that May Gold would love this ground, and he was quite enthusiastic, quite positive about May Gold's chances. So for me, it's all about May Gold. I know Dakota Gold, all the gold names. Dakota Gold, I was there at Newbury last week when he got beaten, last week. I don't even know what day of the week it is anymore with all these yearling sales.
A couple of weeks back.
a couple of weeks back in Newbury, and he's been a great servant to his owners, to Graham and Ian Davison, and to Dodds as well. But for me, I think I'm going to go with a bit of a bigger price in this one, and that's May Double.
Excellent. And then our second race on the Ascot card at 2:35 is the Cumberland Lodge for the Stairs. 1.5 miles. Mirando heads the market currently at 7-4 for Andrew Balling. Sally Ann, I'll stay with you. He's really been a great servant to the yard, hasn't he? He won the Ormond Stakes back in May on soft ground and second to the Technician last time out in the Geoffrey Freer. I think he gave £12 that day. He's a tough and honest sort of horse, isn't he?
Yeah, I'd be hoping that it won't rain for my own sake for doing ITV on Saturday, but I'll be doing a rain dance for Mirando. I actually work for the French stud firm that stands his sire, Ken Dargent, and he's our flagship horse in England at the moment in training. He was brilliant in Chester on soft ground, and it was a miserable day that day when he beat Kew Gardens by 8 lengths. And all year long, I've just been hoping for the ground to be soft again. From at Newbury the last day it was soft, and he ran a great race behind Technician, and hopefully it's going to come up nice and soft for him again. He wants it bottomless as possible, but he's been an unbelievable horse, 6 years of age now for King Power Racing and Andrew Balding, and I'll be hoping he'll be adding another Group 3 win to the Roll of Honour for his daughter.
Yeah, I've been to some bad days racing in terms of weather, but that day in Chester really took the biscuit. I thought the roof of the press tent, there was a temporary press facility that was basically a Wendy tent, and it felt like it was going to blow away or it was going to cave in on top of us. Such was the severity of the rain that fell.
That's the type of weather that Mirando needs. So her in the rest, though, could just head straight up.
Yeah, and it could be that Ascot's getting some of that for sure with this storm that's blowing in. The third and final race we're going to talk about is the big handicap on the day at 3:10. It's the Challenge Cup. Last year's first and second head the market again in Raising Sands. Currently is your 5-1 favourite there ahead of the horse that was second in it last year. It's always a difficult race to figure out. Kevin, I hope you can give us some inspiration here.
Well, hopefully. There's some smashing handicappers here, such as Raising Sand and Ripport. But this season now, we've had a three-year-old winner of the Stewards' Cup. We've had a three-year-old winner of the Portland. And I think we might just have a three-year-old winner of this in Casanova for John Gosden. I've been quite impressed with him the last twice. And the main angle with him is he's a son of Frankel, and he takes after his daddy a little bit in that he's quite free going and quite strong through his races. And while he won a maiden over an extended 9 furlongs at Wolverhampton, he was very free that day. And they dropped the maximum mile for his handicap debut with Sandown last time. And he was still plenty strong and travelled really well and went away and won well. He's off a £6 higher mark here. But the key for me is the drop to 7. You know, much deeper company, much more competitive company. But with that comes a big field with likely to be much more pace in front of him. And I just suspect the gallop they'll be going will be a comfortable one for him. And Andrea Zini won't have to get in a fight with him as Rab Havlin has had to have done the last twice he's run just to get him settled. I think he'll be much more in a happy place in his comfort zone there at the gallop they go here. And I'd be quite hopeful that he could step up sufficiently to go very close off his revised mark. I'm looking at the way he moves in his pedigree. I think softer ground should be just fine as long as it's not too bad. And with the type of profile he has, I was expecting to be a little bit shorter than he is. He kind of has a bit of a sexy profile for a race like this. And despite giving up a lot in terms of experience to his rivals, I think the fact that he's as unexposed as he is will be to his benefit in terms of being well handicapped enough to go win a race like this.
Yeah, when I first went through the race, I have to say I thought he really was the standout horse in it. The one caveat I did have, though, was that in Beverly, he was sent off a 5-4 on chance for a maiden on good to soft ground, and he struggled. He seemed to struggle that day. He was beaten 4.5 lengths into fifth. Obviously, they gelded him after that, and he's won twice since. And Sandown, he was very, very impressive. But my concern for him, Kevin, would have been the ground. Sally Ann, did you go through this race in any great depth?
Yeah, I feel like I see Ripoff running on ITV every single week. That's it. And I feel like if I tick him off enough, eventually he'd do something for me. But I actually had Bedwin's story in this race. There was a late defection in the Cambridgeshire. He was pulled out on the day. It can't be that bad a problem if he's rocking up here again. And he's been shortened all the time. As long as he stayed in the race, his car keeps getting shorter. But it could be an interesting one for Sizen Door, and Crouch is in the saddle this time.
Yeah, he's definitely not without a chance. My own fancy is remarkable for David O'Meara. They got this horse out of John Gosson's back in 2017. He was off the track for a long time. At his height, I think he was rated around 107. He's rated 98 now, and he's shown some glimmers of his old form. He would appreciate a bit of cutting the ground, and currently at around 33-1. I think he'll probably go off bigger than that, but I think he's a decent stab in a very, very open race. So stay tuned, and when we come back, we're going to get deep into the betting battle with Kevin and Sally Ann, who's standing in for Mr. O'Brien. So welcome back to Racing Only Better. Now it's time for the betting battle. This is where it's all won or lost. Last week, Kevin, unfortunately, I don't think you tipped a winner, nor did I, so you won't. Let's not dwell on that for too long. But
crossbar.
I think your fortunes are about to change. Will you tell us what your nap is this weekend?
I'm going to go with Iridessa, Barry, for reasons given earlier on the podcast. I think she's a very fair price at the minute. I'll be going win only, none of this each way scumbaggery for me. And hopefully it'll be a case of up and down the lines and easy money.
Iridessa, keeping it in the family there. It's good to see.
Very much
and
so.
And controversial, controversial, because you're going up against The Voice, who's nap this weekend. We've just received a text from the sunny climes of Tenerife, where he's lounging back drinking some fantastic cocktail at the moment. And he's just tipped Hermosa in the same race. So it's never a good sign when you go up against The Voice. Never a good sign. Sally Ann, I don't know whether I'll get mine in before you, because I have a terrible fear we're going to tip the same horse. But ladies first.
Well, Kevin Blake had offered me a lot of money to tip at something that had absolutely no chance, just so he could beat Gary O'Brien. But I'm shocked that Kevin has gone for a Joseph O'Brien horse. That really came out of left field there. But I'm going to do the scumbaggery that Kevin referred to so gentlemanly just before. That I actually like Magical at an each way price in the arc. I think it's a big price for her, and I know she keeps coming up against Enable, but I think she could easily fit in with it. With a place, even if she doesn't create the upset.
Well, we've all gone for Philly so far, and I'm going to make it the four-timer. I'm going to tip May Gold in the opener at Ascot on Saturday. That's the Roy Stakes, May Gold, Ed Walker's Philly, who we've already spoke about. All that's left for me to do is say thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Sally Ann. You've both been fantastic. Fingers crossed, Sally Ann. I hope you get through Sunday okay. I know it's a busy day for you over in Longchamp. And Kevin, what's on the agenda for you this weekend?
Oh, I tell you what, my other half is going over to the Ark, and I'm not. So.
Ooh, that's a bad sign.
I'm going to have a woman.
Don't worry, I'll look after her, Kevin. Don't worry.
I'm sure she'll have plenty of chaperones over there, Sally Ann.
I'll tell you what, I'll make use of it. I'm going to have a few of the lads over here for a few beers on Saturday night, so that'll be my weekend.
Well, that sounds like fun. Folks, thank you very much for your time today and your contributions. All that's left for me to say is don't forget to subscribe through your chosen podcast providers. And don't forget, more importantly, to bet safely and bet wisely this weekend.